Hi, everybody. Thanks to the generosity of John Houlihan, we're having a Halloween contest. Five winners will receive the Trelleborg Monstrosities novella with the Trelleborg Monstrosities Call of Cthulhu adventure. Five other winners will receive the Trelleborg Monstrosities novella with the Trelleborg Monstrosities Savage World adventure. All you have to do is email us at nerdsdomain@gmail.com with your favorite Call of Cthulhu story. It can be something you played through or a story you read. Just tell us about your experience. And two, you need to go over to facebook.com/TrelleborgMonstrosities, TrelleborG Monstrosities, and like the Facebook page. The contest will run through November 1st at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're looking forward to reading all of your entries.
Your brain, you're in the Nerd's Domain. Come on in, it's about to begin.
Hi, I'm Matt.
I'm John.
I'm Jesse.
I'm Shirley.
And welcome to the Nerd's Domain podcast. In this episode, we're doing Nerd's Domain on the Criterion Collection, and we've watched Sword of Doom.
The Sword of Doom.
In
that
these
wasn't
episodes,
as cool as last time.
No. In these episodes, we take a look at the movie we've chosen from the Criterion Collection and review it. So what is the Criterion Collection, Jesse?
The Criterion Collection is a continuing series of important classic and contemporary films on home video.
All right, let's get the basics of Sword of Doom out there. So I have two different descriptions. The one from IMDb says, through his unconscionable actions against others, a sociopath samurai builds a trail of vendettas that follow him closely.
I don't know if I'd call him a sociopath.
I think I would.
He's the definition of a sociopath.
Yeah, I'm kind of pretty sure he is, Jesse. The Criterion Collection says, Takasuya Nakadai, there we go, and Toshiro Mifune star in the story of a wandering samurai who exists in a maelstrom of violence. A gifted swordsman plying his trade during the turbulent final days of of shogunate rule, Ryunosuke kills without remorse, without mercy. It is a way of life that ultimately leads to madness. So, other than the fact that he is a sociopath and Jesse doesn't think so, do those describe the movie, guys?
Yeah, pretty good.
Pretty well enough. I don't like the first one, but the Criterion Collection's a little closer.
What do you think, Shirley?
Yeah, I mean, the sociopath is, like, dead on. The thing is, I was like, why is his face always like that? And now that you read that, because I didn't read it before I watched the movie, I'm like, oh.
He had no emotions.
He's a sociopath. That's why he has no, yeah. But the thing is, he does laugh during one part of it, but I think that's because the madness is starting to take over.
Yeah, it's a lie laughter.
He also has rare glimpses of things. Like, there is times he kind of cares for the girl. There is times when he kind of smiles.
Yeah, kind of is the key word there, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of... I kind of like the character.
Of course you
but
do.
When I was growing up, I had a hard time with emotions. For some reason. I really did. They said
you did.
I... Huh? Well, okay.
You
I
did.
Might kind of do. But I'm not really one of them that wears my emotions on my sleeve. When my grandfather died, I went to his funeral and I didn't seem upset at it. I was upset internally, but I didn't show any emotion.
Yeah.
But I also wouldn't show happy emotion either.
Okay.
Yeah. I've kind of gotten over it because I had parents who pushed me towards the right direction and said that that was a bad thing to do, so I didn't turn into a murdering samurai who killed willy-nilly.
Instead, all of your characters do.
Wait a minute.
Did we lose everybody else?
We're letting you talk.
RPGs are good for people. They give you a release.
Yeah,
if this guy had Dungeons and Dragons,
that's awesome. Quote of the night.
No. 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 That's even scarier. So who wants to give us a rundown of what exactly happened in the movie?
I will.
Okay.
So we open up on a pastoral mountain scene. It's beautiful country, and a grandfather and his granddaughter are walking up a up the mountain to go through a pass to get from one section of the country to another. They are Buddhist pilgrims attempting to visit all of the sacred sites in Japan. When they decide to break for lunch before heading down the hill again, the sociopath samurai in question, alliteration is hard, comes across the grandfather, who is by himself praying at a shrine, praying for Buddha to bring him death, so that his granddaughter will be free of his burden. And
which Buddha brings.
Do what?
Which Buddha supplies.
In a way. He specifically is asking for a quiet and respectful death, you know, once they've hit a town where she could be married and have a life, but the samurai
should have been more
him.
Specific.
Probably his fault. Yes, you're right. No. So the samurai kills him, leaving the granddaughter grieving. The samurai passes a thief. Well, we don't know he's a thief until later. Excuse me. But the samurai passes a guy on the road who then takes the girl under his protection. Then we learn that the samurai is from the next village that the grandfather and granddaughter would have been visiting, where he is supposed to participate in a sparring match with another samurai. They are rivals for the seat of a swordsman's style school. However, the samurai has been kicked out of the school, and his rival is in line to become the new head of the school. The samurai is a much better swordsman, and when his rival's wife comes to beg that the samurai throw the fight so that her husband or brother, I was a little unsure about that, probably both from my further reading. If the samurai will let the husband brother win, then everybody's family will be rich and happy, and the samurai will be the only one who loses out. The samurai says to dishonor his blade would be for like a woman to give up her chastity is just not done. Hint, hint. And then he tells the woman he's saying to the woman, if you will sleep with me, I will throw the fight. The woman agrees by showing up at a dirty old mill where they can meet in secret. And this is going long, so I'll start to...
Yeah, you're getting really detailed there.
That mill was all full of sexual innuendo.
Yes, it was. That was, you know, that was the way they could show the sex scene without showing the sex scene.
It was 1966.
Right.
True.
So, the samurai sleeps with the man's wife. The man finds out, the rival finds out, and instead of trying to have a honest sparring match, the rival tries to kill the samurai. So supposedly in self-defense, the samurai has to kill the rival because there's just no other move that would possibly... fend off the attack unless, you know, he has to just kill his rival. This causes him to be outcast, as every student of the school then tries to kill the samurai. The samurai kills them instead, and the samurai goes and joins up with a militia group that in my reading of the synopsis says is supporting the government, but I didn't really get that vibe from the film. I thought they were a rebellious group. Does anybody remember?
He specifically states at one time working for the Shogunate, but it's only mentioned in passing.
Okay, then who was the swordsman that they jumped in the snow that our main character did not fight with?
He was another. I think he was another Ronin, and it was basically to show that he wasn't the only skilled swordsman in the world. I think that was the first time he'd ever actually met somebody who was.
But it was a political target. Like
He wasn't the one who was supposed to be hitting, because they specifically stated when he jumps out that we've got the wrong guy.
Oh, that I missed that.
Then they decided to go ahead and try to kill him anyway, which honestly, after he kills the first 15 people on my team, I don't know why they didn't just throw up their hands and go, we said we got the wrong guy, sorry.
Well, because
it was a question of honor.
Well, they killed the other person in the other palanquin.
Yeah.
There were two palanquins, and they killed the other person. So this guy was a witness. So you can't leave a witness. Is how I read it. Is how I see it now that you've explained that guy wasn't their target. So anyway, yeah, he joins up with this militia group. And things go badly from there. He ends up marrying the wife of the rival and having a son with her. And then he kills her and leaves the son, who is young and unable to fend for himself, leaves the son in the house and just walks away.
He kills her only after she asks him to kill him.
Well, after she tries to kill him.
Yeah.
But they can't stand each other. They, you know, that was only an excuse to do the deed. He wanted to do it anyway. Mm. And she hated him for everything. So he kills the woman. He continues to run around with the militia group because he is one of the most awesome swordsmen ever. Except for that one guy that he would not fight because he was potentially better. Although he does swear to eventually fight him at some point in his life. The brother of his rival trains and trains and trains to kill him, falls in love with a courtesan, kind of like a geisha, but not it seemed to me that the geisha and the courtesan were separated because they mention geishas, but they don't get into the
text. Yeah, in Japanese, historical Japanese, courtesans and geishas are very different. Geishas are trained to be companions, and then they can become courtesans, but it's a hard transition. Courtesans are never geisha and are looked at very differently. It's a royalty, like lordly thing that they did.
Okay, because, she was at the flower school being trained to be a courtesan.
And the flower school... The flower school is about training them in the proper etiquette, not like
to be geisha.
But it's different than being a geisha because geisha go to geisha schools. The flower school is about teaching them etiquette and the proper way to take care of their husband and all that stuff and run a house, and not about just being pretty and pleasing.
So courtesans are supposed to be wives.
Yes.
Okay,
so
that's the difference.
Essentially, courtesans are people that are like the son of a lord, or the daughter of a lord could be a courtesan to the prince.
Right, but then a geisha would be lowborn?
Typically,
okay.
But not always.
All right, I was never aware. I knew what a geisha was, but I was never aware that a courtesan would have been a different term like that. So
very much so.
Anyway, back on topic. The brother of the rival falls in love with the courtesan, can't be with her because she's got her life and he's got his. Eventually, they all end up in the same city. The main character, his militia group, the courtesan, and the rival. The rival's brother. The brother is attempting to kill the main character. The militia group turns on itself. They have two leaders. And each of them individually plots to kill the other. One of them enlists the main character. The other one has the militia group as his army, basically.
The entire militia group.
Yeah. And then the courtesan overhears the main character and his boss talking about killing the other leader of the militia group. Once that happens, and then also the boss says, if you kill the other leader, I'll help you kill the brother. And the courtesan hears this, gets given to the samurai, the main character, because she overhears all the planning. And then, then the samurai basically goes insane because of all the evil and the ghosts of his past have built up, and they're starting to bother him because, as it turns out, the courtesan is the granddaughter from the very beginning of the movie. And once he realizes what he did to her, I believe he starts to feel guilt, but because he's a sociopath, he snaps.
Yeah, the words of the other samurai also start really resounding with him. The whole
which other
it's not
samurai?
the samurai that spooked him in the first place with the
because
he specifically states the sword's not evil; it's the person that makes the sword evil.
Right. Yeah.
And he always felt he had a possessed sword.
Right. The soul. Yeah. The soul is the sword. And then if the sword is evil, the soul is evil, or something along those lines. So yeah, so then the samurai goes insane, starts killing the militia group, and burning down the building that they're in, and the end.
Yeah,
mid-swing.
Essentially,
I have never cussed at my TV as hard as I did at that ending.
Really?
Well,
I had
funny
to run it
thing
back.
Is, yeah, go ahead.
I kind of cheated. After the very first duel, there is no music in this at all during the fight scenes.
That's right.
So I queued up music on my iPod when the fight scene started up.
Nice. Oh, my God.
So during that last fight, I had Metallica going on. There was sword fight and all this stuff, and I kept thinking, this is not the way he should die.
He doesn't.
This isn't right.
Well.
No matter how he's going to die, he was going to die a coward's death, and I felt he deserved the duel that he basically killed everybody else in, because somebody needed the besting.
Well, Jesse, have you not read any further into the story that this movie portrays?
You mean
what
do
story?
Research?
Yeah.
No.
I do know that there were supposed to be other movies, but I like to view the movies that were done. They
well,
were never done, so it
doesn't
exist.
Well, okay. Well, this movie is based off of arguably the longest series of novels ever written in any language ever.
Well, yeah, but I haven't read those books.
Well, I'm saying there are 41 books in this series.
Yeah.
And you read them all?
Set it up for the hero.
There's no
hero. The
hero
was going to be waiting outside to kill him as he came rushing out the building.
You mean
the
brother?
So even if he did just, huh?
Are you talking about the brother?
Which, I don't understand that either.
The guy who had the love interest of...
Right, the courtesan. Yeah, that's the rival.
Was supposed to be waiting outside.
What were you saying, Shirley?
I didn't understand because in the winter... he was supposed to meet that kid the next day for the duel, and then it flashes up spring of
right
something
after
1863.
And
I was like, what?
After he kills the mistress, he doesn't. He just he leaves with the militia group.
Yeah,
like the militia group is
when the other
is pushing him to move on and do continue their work.
But that's
but
an
like,
assumption. Why didn't they show some of that?
I don't know if it was an assumption. See, the problem is I've read, this plot synopsis and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So now I don't remember if that was actually something
I
saw.
It never actually states in there.
There wasn't anything in there. It was just
he
kills her, and they're talking about the duel. He kills her. He's supposed to go to the duel the next day. And then all of a sudden it's spring,
right,
and it doesn't talk about
Kyoto.
The duel, and then the kid shows up in the city during the spring, and I'm like, hold on. Everybody dies.
I think they kind of condensed it for
right,
time, because they show afterwards that they're getting ready for the next thing they have to do, because they do progress to Kyoto, and the courtesan's uncle, or the guy who found her and saved
the
her,
guy who found her,
yeah.
also
yeah.
has a handgun. ready for the worst possible thing. So no matter what, the guy was going to die as soon as he came out of that building. So I felt like the way it ended was perfect for the movie because no matter what, he wasn't going to survive that encounter. Either he was going to die into the swordsman's smoke inhalation, he was going to die to the courtesan's boyfriend as he rushed out the door, or he was going to get shot.
No.
Well, what if the courtesan's boyfriend had insisted on an honorable duel and waited for him to be healed?
He had already decided not to. He had agreed to wait on the door and kill him as he came outside of the building.
But
so he was going to ambush him.
Okay, that is what he said he was going to do. You don't see what actions he actually takes. So,
no, you don't. You kind of get to build your own story that way. I like that.
Or you
and I know that's not the way he intended it. But
I don't know what happens. I haven't read the books, but the I guess knowing that it was a trilogy or that it was intended to be a trilogy and ending with him, his eyes, that shot was amazing. The full of rage, mid swing, freeze frame. You know, like you have no idea what's going to happen next. You know, he's bleeding. He could be dying. You know, and there's still more waiting for him afterwards.
Yeah, and like, the building's still burning. I mean, he was nowhere near the exit at that point.
Right. So who knows what could have happened? Like, the building could have collapsed and kept the two from meeting, and then the samurai gets nursed back to health by someone who doesn't know, or the rival could have been like, I can't kill him in this state. It needs to be an honorable match. You never know what's going to happen. So, you know, to me, it's too up in the air. I want to read the books and find out what actually happened. I doubt I will because I don't have time to read 41 books.
So. Oh, sure you do. It's only 41.
Yeah.
But yeah, this in my book is how a movie based on from the bad guy's point of view should be done. It's in all the Chronicle of Riddick movies, they always state that he is a monster. This guy is a monster.
He's
unapologetic. He's got no emotions whatsoever, but he still is. It's interesting enough to keep watching him to see what he's going to do next.
I agree. I found the movie very compelling towards the middle and yeah, it ramped. Like I had to quit watching it with 20 minutes left to go. And I was sort of mediocrely interested in what was going on. But when I sat down to watch that last 20 minutes, I was like, oh man, this is good. And it really ramped up there. Real fast.
I read somewhere that is one of the longest fight scenes, at least during that time that was ever filmed.
I haven't like sat down to compare it, but I'm sure the fight with the crazy 88 in Kill Bill, was seemed a lot longer to me.
It wasn't as interesting, but yeah,
maybe that, yeah, because. Yeah, no, it was very cool to see him fighting off his ghosts and the militia group at the same time. It was really compelling scene there at the end.
So, Shirley, did you get anything out of the movie, or were there points that you enjoyed?
No, I really found it really interesting. I think the part that I liked the most was, at the beginning, throughout, the first hour and a half of the movie, it felt like there was a bunch of hodgepodge stories put together, but then, at, the last 45 minutes, half an hour, I was like, oh, they're all connected in some way. But, at the beginning, you really didn't get that. And when the grandfather was praying, I was like, I thought that, I always think of Mortal Kombat when I see that, the hat, the type of hats that they wear. But I thought, oh, this is a mystical being sent down by, you know, I'm sure Buddha wouldn't send this guy down, but he appearing to, you know, answer this guy's prayer to die. And then once it went on to him going back to the, are they called dojos? I don't know what they're called.
Yeah,
the schools. Yeah. Went back to the school. I was like, oh, that's not what this is about at all. So I kind of had to rethink my whole thought process about of what the movie was about. And it just didn't seem like there was very many connections in the beginning, and it was kind of confusing until it got, you know, middle three quarters of the way through the movie. And then finally there was all the connections of the family members, and it was basically, I felt like, you know, his story was the only, I felt like his story was the main story, but it tried to tell the story of all of these other characters, and it did it in such a way that it made the movie a little confusing for me. So, but overall, you know, just like Johnny said, the last 30 minutes, 30, 45 minutes of the movie is when I really felt compelled to watch it, and I really started to enjoy and understand what the movie was really all about.
Okay. Hey, we're going to break in here real quick and talk about our other podcast.
We have other podcasts?
Yes, we have one other podcast currently, Jesse. What is the name of that podcast? You called yourself out on this, so it's not my fault.
What You're Doing?
Try again.
Criterion Collection?
Jesse.
That's what we're doing now.
Masks of Nyarlathotep?
I will get, yes, thank you. And what do we do in that podcast?
We play
Jesse Kills People.
Masks of Nyarlathotep. Only people that need to die, just like in the movie we're reviewing now. Just the people
or animals.
Yeah, you did kill an animal.
Mm.
Which I believe, Johnny, isn't that like a sign of a sociopath, a potential sociopath, is if they murder animals and mutilate them and use their blood for things?
It kind of is, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I'm not a psychologist, but I
surely if you could
this.
Say, if there was a villain in the group, who would that villain be?
See, that's really tricky because, you know, there's those ones that hide right out in the open, and the person that you think is the villain really isn't the villain, and the person that you think is your friend is the one that stabs you in the back in the end. So,
Whoa, he's not going to stab you. Jesse, you don't stab people.
Not often.
No, Jesse's the one that think is the villain right
yeah,
now, but I'm thinking he's the one that's probably going to save us all, and George is the one that's going to kill everybody.
All my cards are on the table.
With this life.
My character is half insane.
A little bit, yeah. Hey, how about that thing in the hole, Johnny?
Yeah, that was stupid.
Stupid.
Stupid, awful. Stupid.
So, you guys are having fun?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. This is the most fun without
clearly,
going
Johnny's
to
not
a,
having any fun.
No fun at all.
A live LARP.
Kind of. So, we put up episodes once a week, and we highly suggest you check it out. You can find it on iTunes by searching for Nerds Domain Podcast, for searching for Nerds Domain or Masks of, that either one will help you find that. I don't expect anyone to try and spell Nyarlathotep because
it's just like it sounds.
Yeah.
Is it?
We are 13 episodes live and, by the time this comes out, probably 15 episodes live and growing. Recording every month and putting up every week. So come join us and check that out.
Come on,
Dave. All right, now that we're back.
What do you think about the movie?
You know, honestly, it was slow. It didn't keep my interest in the beginning, and I got distracted, and it was rough to follow. And I kept thinking, you know, I could just do something else and listen, and no, that didn't work.
Yeah, you can't listen to that movie.
It is fully in subtitles.
I mean,
it's all in Japanese.
I seriously think I blinked a couple times, and I missed part of it, and I was like, hold on, what's going on?
I followed the gist of the story. It wasn't bad. It was enjoyable. It was just... kind of meh. I don't know.
Is this an Akira Kurosawa movie, or is this?
Oh, no.
It's not.
No.
Okay, that explains why it was so good.
What? Oh, hey.
I'm just teasing. I like the other one.
Fine. Don't be like
Akira
that.
Akira Kurosawa is awesome.
I'm just good.
No. Overall, it was, yeah. So let's talk about, like, final thoughts. What did you guys think? Jesse, like, give us a rundown.
I absolutely loved it. This would be in my top 20 movies of all time. It
good thing it's top 10. You just handed those in.
Yeah, it's not in the top 10. I was trying to think that this might be in a top 10, and I got it wouldn't push any of them out. So not quite top 10 material, but close. Closer than any Criterion Collection movies come in the past. I really enjoyed it, but I like stories about darker characters. And he still had redeeming qualities. I mean, they were hard. They were hidden. But if it went into a sequel and he survived, it could have easily done a redemption arc.
Okay.
What was so redeeming about him in this movie?
I didn't say there was a lot. But
well,
he
I
want to
know the, like,
but
what?
There was that time when he didn't cut the guy's head off.
Once he realizes the courtesan is the granddaughter of the, or, you know, is the girl in the past.
Yeah.
From the beginning of the movie, he does have a freak out moment.
He shows remorse.
In a way, he doesn't kill her outright.
A lot of the things, he didn't plan on killing her in the room at all.
Well, he told her he wouldn't kill her. As long as she didn't react badly.
Exactly. And as soon as stuff started going down, he kind of took up the protector role.
No, he didn't.
What?
She ran.
No, he didn't.
She hid behind him.
No, when the ghosts
started showing up, he wasn't
caring about those. And then when he started killing the ghosts, she ran away.
That's the only smart thing to do when a man's swinging a sword around.
Exactly. But the thing is, the more that I watched that whole part of the movie, the more that I thought, because it felt like we were missing parts, like we didn't see the whole thing, and then. She's there, you know that she's talked to her uncle and the guy that she likes, the younger samurai,
yeah.
And then, you know, she gets found outside the door. She was trying to collect secrets. There must have been something in there where she knew going, you know, that she had to get close to him, and part of her ruse or whatever it is was to implant those ghosts in his head, so she started telling those stories, and then I feel like at some point either the uncle told her or whatever that knew that he was the person that killed her grandfather, so she brought that part of it up to start, you know, trying to eat away his sanity. Because at that point in time, what came to mind was what her teacher said at the flower school, that anyone in her presence, you know, you succumbed to her charms because she was so charming.
Yeah.
And then when this whole scene was going on, just the look on her face, I felt like she knows what she's doing, and she's trying to drive this guy insane because she knows what buttons to push. So I felt there was a lot of depth to that scene.
Yeah. And a lot of the people he killed kind of asked for it. I mean, I know the guy didn't really ask for it that literally, the grandfather.
Well,
he literally walked on the guy asking to die, so he killed him.
Yeah.
And then went on.
Yeah.
The guy in the duel tried to kill him first, and he didn't set it up that he caught him cheating with his wife, and his wife cheating on him was her own advances.
Yeah.
That was 100% her own fault, I feel. Because if she hadn't have tried to intervene, it would have been an honorable duel, nobody would have died, things would have went on.
But the thing is,
and he stops her from killing herself and the baby. He didn't mind if she killed herself, but he wasn't willing to let her kill the kid.
And what happened to the kid? Like, where did it go after that?
I'm not 100% sure he didn't go back in there and kill her.
You think so?
He was slightly sociopathic. I'll give you guys that bit. Hey. Either that or he just left him crying in the cabin. Because it was supposed to be a trilogy movie, and that might have been the next part of it, too, was the kid growing up without a father and following in daddy's footsteps or whatever.
Yeah.
But again, that's a whole lot of assumptions.
Okay, so Jesse, you never gave us a star
rating. Oh, 5 out of 5.
5 out of 5.
Like I said, okay. It would be in my top 20 movies. Those are definitely off fibers. It's 5 out of 5, 100%.
So, Johnny.
Yeah.
What about you?
Well, I just realized that I was muted a minute ago.
You were like, why are you guys talking over me?
You listening?
Oh, come on, guys.
Well, I gotta say something in response to Jesse's comment about the woman. I have to object to your comment that the woman had it coming. That what happened between him and the rival's wife at the beginning of the film was rape in its to the letter.
No.
He coerced her because he had all the power, and he said, "You will either put out, or you know, I'm going to ruin your life."
But that's not what he was saying. He said, "You're either going to put out, or I'm going to fight this fight the way it's supposed to be done."
But it was still rape. It's still
because
wrong.
Because what she wound up doing was ruining her his life.
I don't have enough of a background in this topic to talk about it. But if the wrong people listen to our podcast now, we're going to get in a lot of trouble with, you know, hate mail and stuff. So, I would argue that your comment that she deserved what happened or that was her fault, that's not true, in my opinion.
I didn't necessarily say she deserved what happened. But it is her fault that it happened.
Again, I think that's not an accurate statement. But it's going to be one of those things until... we'd have to have a much more in-depth conversation about topics that aren't supposed to be in this podcast for that to be resolved. So we'll just move on from there that I highly disagree with that statement. And say that this movie is good. I mean, it's the main character is evil incarnate. He's every definition of evil you could possibly come up with. And, it's still worth watching. I mean, it's not a gross movie. It's just, the bad guy is a bad guy. And, but it has a lot of interesting, story going on that is definitely worth checking out. So I give it a 3.5 just because I hate rating movies, and this one is one of the worst offenders I've seen recently. There is a lot of daytime shots because it was made in the 60s, where everything had to be filmed in the daytime if it was going to be outside. And then they put white text on very light backgrounds, making it very hard for me to read.
Oh yeah, there were a couple
of on the top of the fact that I had to read it because it was in Japanese and not dubbed. Which is always a sticking point with me. If you listen to our previous podcast, I like to not necessarily have my eyes on the screen every second of the movie. So I only give it a 3.5. It's a very good movie. Overall, I liked it a lot.
Okay. Shirley, what did you think?
I'm kind of in the same boat. I liked the movie a lot too, even though in the beginning I was a little confused. I think I usually like subtitled movies. It doesn't bother me that I need to read and have my face pinned to the screen the whole time. I'm usually like that with most movies anyway. But I think I'm giving this like a 3.54. Out of
5.
3.5 out of 5?
Yeah, 3.5-ish, 3.75. I'll take halves or quarters. I'm not taking 0.5.
Yeah, out of 5, so.
Okay.
Just wasn't one of my favorites.
Yeah, the movie wasn't bad. I'll start there, because that's always a good way to start. The movie wasn't bad. It wasn't my favorite at all, and given a chance to see it again, I'd pass. At least right now. Maybe 6 months from now I'd feel different, but right now I just don't care to see it again. Overall, there wasn't anything wrong with it. It was a little slow, but it was the 60s. That's how they did stuff. It was a little hard to follow, like we've been saying. There was a lot going on. And I don't know. I did like a lot of the stuff that was going on in it. So, like, I liked how the swordplay in this one looked a lot better than Seven Samurai.
Yeah.
That was helpful. But overall, it wasn't bad. I'd give it a 3 out of 5, which is about baseline for me. You have to do something heinous to get under a 3. But let's get into my thoughts.
Before we do, that is one thing I forgot to mention that I didn't like about the movie, and I didn't like the fact that the fight scenes didn't have a soundtrack to them.
Yeah.
That really was odd to me, and I felt like I had to interject my own soundtrack to the fight scenes, because they do last quite a while in this movie.
Yeah.
And it just did, I don't know, that was different.
All right, well, then let's get into my thoughts of, or things I was thinking while I watched Sword of Doom. My first thought was, yay, we're samurai! Because I wasn't sure if this was actually going to be a samurai movie or if this was just, you know, the run-of-the-mill sword fighter movie thing. There were some really bad translations, like the fact that they kept calling it fencing.
Oh, yeah.
That I know it sounds stupid, but that kind of bugged the crap out of me.
Yeah, it wasn't fencing.
No.
Okay, just because, again, culture's there. What word would you choose to describe sword fighting if you were to use a single word to describe sword fighting in the English language?
Sword fighting?
I get what you're saying.
I would have interjected dueling. I mean, it's basically what they were...
But it's not dueling, because
you
can kill 50 people in a room.
Or swordplay, or sorting, or... Fencing is too specific to a type of... like, 3 or 4 types of swords.
Right.
That are all Western. I mean, I get what you're saying, and I to a point, I think you're right.
You show up with katana to a fencing match, there's going to be all kinds of problems.
I think that's just a cultural thing. And back in the 60s or whenever this was translated, there wasn't, I mean, because fencing just means, so when they use the Japanese word for sword fighting, fencing is a completely viable option, in my opinion. It's just a cultural thing. Yes, I get what you're saying. Fencing is about rapiers and guys that, you know, dance around and who are French and whatever. You know, and Japanese people aren't French people, you know, like, but it's just a word.
I will throw my backing in with Johnny. I just typed in fencing into Google, and the definition is the sport of fighting with swords, according to a set of rules in order to score points against an opponent.
Which is what that rule was all about at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
okay.
Worst,
okay. Fair enough.
Saying.
That's fine. Okay. That's still my complaint, and I'm going to stick with it. But we'll move on.
That's because you're a culturalist.
What does that even mean?
It's like racist, except he's not against a race; he's against the culture.
Even though I just explained to Johnny earlier in the same podcast the difference between geisha and courtesan,
right?
And did so decently well.
No,
considering.
Yeah. So it's weird that you'll pick up on some things, but refuse to watch anime because you might learn more.
We'll get into that shortly.
Back to my point about bad translation, there were a few other points where the words were just not right, and it was off. Can't think of anything off the top of my head right now, of course, but
something
there were a couple.
Seemed like it went against the mood.
Yeah, or the word was just wrong, or they left something out. It just seemed weird. Anyway, then I noticed that even in ancient Japan, men still argue about sports.
Yes.
Yeah.
That has been since sports were invented, you know, shortly after UGG.
I thought that I was like, ooh, did they just argue about the sport? Okay. That makes sense. And then I moved on. All of those guys that attacked the main character and his group of thugs went to attack the guy in the what do you call that?
Palanquin?
The palanquin. They were terrible.
Yeah.
And I don't, like, kind of, like, it seemed like the rule of ninja applied here. And
wait,
if you don't know the rule of ninja, the more ninja there are, the worse they are at what they're doing.
So you're saying the militia group were terrible swordsmen, is your opinion?
Like, did you see how they fought? Like,
okay, did you read the dialogue? The entire time the guy in the palanquin was fighting, he was like, why are you doing this? I don't want to kill you. Some of you are actually pretty good swordsmen. You're forcing me to kill you all.
But I'm saying, like it was, I swipe at you and you drop, or I cut you and you drop.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, he didn't get touched, and there were like 100 times where they could have cut him.
Because his skill level was that much higher.
Yeah, I think he was the only samurai of that group. The rest of them were just kind of like bandits.
I don't doubt that. But
well,
yeah.
Again, I'm not an expert in Japanese culture, but I believe during this time period, if you held a sword and you weren't of the samurai caste, you were killed. I mean, you know, like, so, and then the fact that they were working for the shogunate, you know, I guess they could have been hired thugs, but from my understanding is they should have been samurai. So they just weren't as awesome as those two guys, the main character and the dude in the palanquin.
It seemed like every time there were more than a couple of guys with swords on the screen, they were really bad. Like,
oh, yeah.
All the group of guys were terrible.
Well, this
it happened in the forest. It even happened in the last scene, even though, you know, that the main character gets cut up quite a bit there. Even then, they're terrible. Like, there's times when they're not even swinging and just running at it.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I'm behind you. I'm behind you, and you're focused on something else. I'm going to scream now so you notice and turn around and cut me in half.
Or when he's laying on the ground almost dead.
Yeah.
They wait for him to get a second wind almost before they start.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, I thought that was more of an honor thing. I mean, I'm, like,
it comes
asking
a quick time,
questions.
And you got to throw honor in the wind and just kill a dude.
Yeah,
you're right, Shirley, that they were taught, you know, again, they're supposed to be samurai.
Yeah.
They're taught that they shouldn't just jump the dude while he's, you know.
Or when his back is to you or
right.
Like that.
You
and
pull
you
the gun and shoot him.
No.
Well, that's not honorable.
It's
that's
cowardly.
Yeah, they did what they were supposed to. The giving the shout before they dropped the sword on his back was part of their training. So
I do believe mutiny is not honorable either.
That's a pirate.
So,
that's not samurai.
They were mutinying.
Well, there's a real fine line. You know, the saying. To the victor go the spoil, or the victors write the history books. You know, it probably had because the main character wins a fight, it's dishonorable. And if the group of militiamen had won the fight, they had to put this guy down. You know, that's how it would have gone. It's a matter of perspective. You know, whose side you look at it from. It probably was dishonorable to even fight him and not just challenge him to a one-on-one duel. You know, he may have had 50 one-on-one duels to go through, but he should have gone through them.
Well, then I have officially learned something from this movie.
What's that?
I am not very honorable.
No, you're not.
No, you're not.
Aren't you glad everybody, like... agrees with you.
That. Maybe this just dawned on me. Have I done honorable things before?
Yeah.
I mean,
and then I cut off the judge's head.
It's weird that you start out identifying with this guy. So.
All right. The last thing I noticed, and this will tell you when I lost interest in the movie. So that storm just was like, "Hey, I'm outside. Oh my God, it's raining." Like, there was there was a crack of thunder, and then it was pouring. And there was no notice of that storm coming.
Might be a Japanese thing, though. Don't they get, like, a lot of storms?
Well, they get storms, but are you telling me that weather in Japan works differently than here, Jesse?
I'm telling you, it did when I was in England.
It just random. There was a crack of thunder, no snow, clouds in the sky, and then it just water dropped from the sky.
Hold on, could you see the sky?
Yeah.
But it was too bright.
No, okay, again, 1960s movie technology. It had to be that bright. Two, you've never lived anywhere that could consider to have hills, let alone mountains.
I live in southern Indiana. We have hills.
No, you don't. you live in southern Indiana. Have you ever traveled further south?
Yes.
And you didn't think the hills got worse?
Those are called mountains.
No, those are hills.
About the Appalachians.
There are no mountains south of Indiana.
Huh?
There aren't mountains directly south of Indiana. Anyway, the point is that the weather patterns are different because it's a different country. And I totally have been in places where the sky just opened up and torrential downpour happened. So, whatever. You know, that's your observation. I disagree.
Okay. So, I think that'll do us tonight for the Nerds Domain podcast. Wow. There it goes.
We've got shirts and we've got Twitter.
Yeah, you can send us an email at nerdsdomain@gmail.com if you have feedback, or you can catch us on Twitter. I'm at Quiet. Johnny is at Fool's Mask. Shirley is at SNED70. And Jesse is at J_Kimmett. Or you can find... Two people follow you.
Or you
can find the website at Nerds Domain. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/nerdsdomain. We want to thank Josh Shop for our music. If you want to help us out, head over to the website and buy something through our Amazon link. Same price as always, but a little bit comes back to us. If you enjoy the podcast, we encourage you to give it a review over on iTunes and let us know what you think. Or head to the website and make a comment. We also have shirts available at slashloot.com. And we'll talk to you real soon.